there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And one of the things that I'm always interested in is how people survive. Yesterday, we did a program about the flight-fight reaction, or the fight-flight reaction. And I discovered in my research that every time you try to search the flight part of it, all you ever find is the two, the fight-flight part. Meaning, nobody writes about what it's like to run away. They write what it's like to either be there or run away. And they talk about your chemistry and your chemical changes as if it's an identical thing, but we know it's not. When you're in a fight, your upper body dominates. You want to use your arms, you want to use your chest, you want to use your upper muscles. When you're in flight, you can use your bottom part. You're going to run your legs, you're going to kick. See? Oh, wait a minute then. Well, what about different parts of our chemistry? What about our hormones? When you're running, usually you're frightened. When you're fighting, usually you're rageful. So, could they be different chemistries? Is there something about the flight reaction that we don't understand? If you hear that a big wave is coming in your direction, and you start heading up the mountain with all your alacrity, you're one scared bunny, you know? So, I've decided to focus my research on learning more about the flight reaction. In fact, if you Google the flight reaction, you find nothing. You find only the fight-flight reaction. The flight reaction is virtually invisible. So I wondered about this. Why would we, and how does this affect us if we don't know about the mechanism of flight, the psychology of flight? And I wondered, do humans run away from things? And I focused that part today on humans in relationships, people in relationships. When you're in a relationship, are you running away? Are you preparing for an exit? See, part of the flight reaction is to always look for the nearest exit. Part of when you enter any situation, there's a part of you that's always evaluating, where's the door? And is anybody here dangerous? Right? Anybody here that could hurt me? Let me put an eye on them. And if something happens, how do I get out of here? How do I get out of here? A nice t-shirt. How do I get out of here? Right? How many times in life have you felt that way in a job? How do I get out of here? In a bad situation, how do I get out of here? You know? How do I get out of here? Well, that part of us is what I want to look at, because I think we do consider it. And I think we consider it much more than most people imagine. I think everybody who goes into a relationship at some point wonders, how am I going to get out of this? You don't know it, but you do it. Because people survive the ending of relationships. And usually because they had an alternative strategy the entire time. And the people who suffer the most, the people who have the biggest depression, are those that did not have an alternative strategy. They had everything sunk in the relationship. They find out the relationship doesn't work. They catch their mate cheating on them. They break up the relationship, and they're totally devastated. So am I saying it's good to have alternative strategies, or am I saying it's not so good? Well, I think there's two sides to it. Of course, it's always nice if you can land on your feet. And I figured there are three kinds of people, as opposed to the usual two kinds of people that I always see. They're the kind of people who always prepare an exit strategy, these three kinds of people, because, number one, they're independent. They're alone. They're on their own. It's Zorba the Greek. And they don't depend on anybody. And so they're ready to be alone. Just ready to, because it's the way they are. Usually these kind of people are good hobbyists. Usually they're people who spend good quality time alone. They like nature. They like to be alone. Relationships are kind of a nice bonus. So that's one kind of person. The very same kind of person could be damaged. They could be, I like to be alone because I want nobody to hurt me. But virtually there are people who are committed to being alone. Now, why I mention them is because they have an exit strategy right from the beginning. Right from the beginning, as soon as they get in a relationship, they know, this doesn't work, I'm going back to being alone. In fact, they have a constant criteria when they're dating someone, which is, you better be more fun than being alone. Because, you know, when you meet somebody who has a great time being alone, or even a good time being alone, you're competing with them. Because it's like a menage a trois. They have a relationship with themselves. And then you're adding yourself into it. So one category of people are the people who love to be alone and plan to be alone and are fine being alone. Whether they're fine because they're disturbed or whether they're fine because they're very healthy, they are fine being alone. Another group of people were damaged in early childhood. And they pick miserable relationships. Now, these group of people are dependent. They are damaged. They had some miserable stuff. They picked the right people for the wrong things and the wrong people for the right things. And so they're developing external strategies because they know nobody's ever really going to love them. And so they have strategies. And the third kind of people are the kind of people who pick people because they perceive something wrong. They know something's going to go wrong in advance. So if you're going out with somebody and he happens to be a biker and he's got tattoos and he carries chains around his waist and he's snorting cocaine, you say to yourself, ah, that's my kind of guy. Because even though that relationship may not work out to its genteel best, you pick him because you know it's going to end. So here's what I'm saying. I'm saying we have ways of predicting ending to relationship based on the kind of person we are. And again, I'll go back to the three types. The one is the person who likes to be alone for one reason or another. The other one is the one who needs to be attached because they were damaged in childhood, so they're just attaching themselves. And the third one actually picks somebody because they're absolutely wrong. All right. So how do you do it? And I'm asking you, how do you protect yourself in relationships? How do you keep one foot out the door? Because very few people make an absolute commitment in a relationship. Even if they get married, even if they say the words, very few people make the absolute commitment. Here are some of the ways that people get exit strategies. Well, the most common way is have children. You're in a relationship and you're loving somebody, and it's a very vulnerable thing loving somebody because they could leave you, they could hurt you, they could betray you. So you buy insurances, having children. Now you notice your relationship with the partner is not as strong because you have the children, and your relationship with the children becomes the focus. In effect, it's taken you away from the relationship itself. Nature's way, it works. Another way is you could build something and give yourself financial stress. You build a house, you have to maintain it. You get a mortgage, you got to pay the mortgage. You get a car, you have to pay for the car, the insurance, the other stuff. And the two of you think you're building a beautiful life together, but you have so many attachments and you have so many debts that you can no longer really love each other because you're always worried about money and arguing about it. One would wonder, why did you do this? Why'd you build that big house? Why'd you take on that debt? You say to have a better life, but look at you. You're spending all your time unhappy. Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Another thing that people do to keep an exit available, to create some kind of thing that's going to get them out of the relationship or not have them completely in the relationship, is they turn off sexually. See, sex is a great bond. The chemistry of sex is terrific. The chemistry of sex is such that it bonds you. You have, number one, you have the sexual experience, you have contact, you have sweat, you have laying next to each other, and then you have oxytocin, the bonding chemical afterwards. You have, sex is like a wonderful bonder. It keeps people really feeling close. We know that sex eventually, with most people, wanes. As it wanes, what do you have that holds you as closely to the other person? Do you understand if your person is a close lover and you have a passionate lover and you're dying to be next to them and next to their body and lay with them and hold them, that's one thing. But now when you don't have that physical attachment at that level, even if you have the occasional requisite two times a week, you're not that attached anymore. And what do you have instead? You have a kind of looking at a partner. You're like, it's almost, well, you have your needs and I have my needs. And our needs are not to hold each other in our arms and lay there and just kiss. No, our needs are whatever your needs are and whatever my needs are, and we hope our needs will meet. So the person, in effect, becomes a partner. But you have to get your needs met, and they have to get their needs met, so in effect they're adversarial. So you go from the bonding of sex to an adversarial kind of relationship where sex dissolves as we lose it. And maybe we don't lose sex. Maybe we send it away. Who knows? Who knows how it really works? Because some people keep sex alive forever. You know? Other things that people do to have strategies that put your foot outside the door, that have you always not bonded, other things that people do. Infidelity. Not that I'm judging infidelity, but the whole idea of flirtation or having somebody on the outside that you're attracted to or even talking to or doing emails with, or that thing on the outside, it's like a safety thing. I'm going to have something on the outside with somebody else so that you can't hurt me that much. And I'll have this secret over you. And it will be a power. What do you do, my friends? We're going to have in a few minutes, I'm going to open the phones. And I want to know, what do you do purposely that drives a little wedge in your relationship? And I want you to honestly tell me. And don't blame the other guy. Don't tell me what they do. Tell me what you know you do, because you've done it in every relationship. My telephone number is 212-209-2900. Some people get involved in hobbies. Hobbies can become something like, I'm going to play golf. Or I'm going to go running. Or I'm going to work out in the gym. It's a hobby. Because you do it repeatedly. And nobody can argue with you. It's what you do for fun. So your wife kind of sits at home, wishing that she could be close with you, and you're going to the gym. And she has no argument. Well, he's just taking care of himself, I guess. But it's a distraction. It pulls you away. Why isn't she on the treadmill next to you? You know? Jealousy, possessiveness. Possessiveness becomes another way. See, possessiveness is when you know you're doing something wrong and you're not providing the needs of the relationship, that you start getting suspicious that your mate may go away. See, when you're secure and you feel terrific and you feel fabulously secure, you're not as possessive. It's when you're insecure that you're possessive. And when you're insecure, it's because some part of you on the inside feels shaken, feels like it's insecure, out of power, powerless. I'm very curious about midlife crisis. I'm wondering if midlife crisis, what men go through when they get to a certain age, and they start distracting by wanting to buy machines and have flirtations and doing stuff like that, even though the chemistry of it is such that we can say nature designs it that way, I'm not so sure if it's not just as you get older, you become more vulnerable, As you become vulnerable, you feel more dependent. As you become more dependent, you get scared, and therefore you attach yourself to something on the outside, just as in menopause. I think the same thing happens for women. They're getting older, and then suddenly they're attracted to something they've got to know about. They become so attracted, it's driving them towards a new cat, a new house, a new car, a new something. So I think nature plays a big part in it. But, you know, we're very conscious human beings. We all have issues to deal with. We could consider any issue an issue, right? Let's say you have a racial issue, a religious issue between the two of you. And you have this issue and you could either fight about it or you just let it be there. You have an issue. He's dirty and she cleans up. She cooks and he doesn't do anything. It's an issue. As the wedge gets driven between you, the issue becomes more and more important. One of the things about age that I like about people getting older is they spend less time on the issues. They either deal with the issue and say, let's do it. We're going to have to deal with this. You don't bring in enough money for me, and I've got to bring up the kids, so I'm going to go out and get a job. That's one way of dealing with the issue. And the other way of dealing with the issue is to say, it's not so important. We don't need that much money. So part of the advantage of maturity is you either reduce the importance of the issue or you deal with it. Most people in relationships don't do either. They don't deal with it. They don't reduce the importance of it. So what do? They talk to their mother about it. Yes, you go and you start setting up these little cliques. And you have a three-way thing going on where you start telling your friends and your parents about what a miserable person this other person is. You start complaining about it. And now you have this three-way thing. You say things to your friends you would never say to your wife. And why? Because you're scared. Why don't you tell her? Because she would never deal with it properly. Well, you know, there's a thing, there's a message I have for every human out there. And it's a message that is a rule of the group of men that I am with, the group of men that I lead. The rule is never fear a partner leaving you. Never sacrifice yourself and what you believe in for fear of your partner leaving. No, you don't sacrifice what you believe in. You don't bury what you believe in because you're afraid they're going to leave. If you live in fear of a partner leaving you, they have all this power, and the only thing you could do is, if you live in fear of it, all you could ever do is lie to them. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, talking about how people have these kind of exits in their relationships, these strategies to stay outside. Yes, gossiping, talking about people, setting up these little things, getting together with your friends, going even to a therapist to talk about your relationship very often is a way out of the relationship. You go there and you get the courage to break your relationship. I mean, who knows? What about you? What are yours? What are your strategies? Do you create life crisis? Do things happen? 212-209-2900. This is because we're going to be running short of time to talk to you, the listeners, because soon we're going to be going into our fund drive. And you'll hear them say on WBAI, we want to short the fund drive, which sounds like Goldman Sachs. You know, we want to short the mortgage market. We want to shorten the fund drive. We want to make it shorter. So we need you to be helping us as much as possible during the fund drive, which starts just late next week. No, late the week after. You get that information on our thing. But I want to use our time as much as possible because we have people who are scheduled to be with us who are going to be guests. I want to use that time as much as possible to talk to you and about your stuff and make contact with you as well. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand. It seems like you are tapping into something that is affecting me right now in a very profound way in terms of our exit strategy.
Tell me your name.
My name, I'd rather keep it because the information is very sensitive.
So make
I'd
up
rather
a
just say my name is Joe.
Joe is good.
Okay. All right. And the thing about the exit strategy is I think I'm in a relationship where the second archetype that you described about the abusive relationship early
yeah.
on in my wife's experience has dictated our present experience. So I think somewhere
you're saying
along
that
the
she
line,
had damage in her childhood.
Yes.
And that
damage
is
damage,
rubbing
yes.
off on you now.
Yes, it's definitely rubbing off on me, but I'm trying to fight because she also admitted that we're now involved in like a power struggle, and the issue is very complicated, so I don't want to go off on what that's about, but we have children together, and we've been together for over 25 years.
Wow.
And now we're separating, in a sense.
Well, in a sense, though, but you're also telling me that she's menopausal.
Well, I'm telling you that it's
25
possible.
Years.
Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah.
Is
but
she menopausal? Is she going through that?
Well, she's still menstruating, so she's not, she might be perimenopausal. Is that the term?
Yes, and so yes. that would be a pressure that
yes.
comes on your relationship, and I find it very interesting that you don't even consider that.
Well, I do consider it, but in the way that it's because there is a catalyst to the to this situation going on, and it's not about infidelity or anything like that. I think what it's about her not wanting to deal with the issue of her childhood trauma to a certain degree, and I brought a certain situation into the relationship that made her confront those issues. And so, therefore, she's now looking at this whole situation, the relationship between her and myself, as a sort of like a power struggle in the sense that I had a certain stance that I took about it.
Okay, Joe, you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to break it down to a real
okay,
detail.
Okay, I'm going to break it down.
Make it small and fast, okay?
Small and fast. She had a sister. And I think I've spoken to you before about this, that had a kid. Her sister couldn't take care of the kid. I wanted the kid. We both brought the kid into this relationship. She voluntarily went along with I to bring the kid into a relationship. But what happened was it was supposed to be a temporary situation, and it turned out not to be a temporary situation. For me, I come from a culture and an experience where foster care is not an option. I think that I brought the child into the relationship as a temporary basis, but potentially a permanent basis. My wife was totally against it, and she
okay,
felt...
Okay, stop there for a minute,
okay.
Joe. Stop for a minute. Let me tell you something, okay? This could or could not be an issue according to how close you feel toward your wife. You see, given this same situation, and I know where the scenario is going because I do remember you telling me about it.
Yes. Okay.
Okay? But if you felt really close to her,
mm-hmm.
if you were huggy, kissy, laying in bed, making love every night,
uh-huh.
and kissing each other every morning, this issue would be simple. But because you're not, the child becomes a third piece of the thing to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you, it's not real.
I know
it's not a real issue.
Okay.
And it's not even real that she has to deal with her childhood about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a real issue. It's an issue about you two losing the bond that you used to have with each other.
Okay.
How do you get the bond back without addressing the issue of the boy? How do you
okay.
get the bond with her? How does she feel safe with you again?
Okay,
what
well,
does she
you know
need
what?
From you?
I don't think that she's going to be able to feel safe with me again. And I'm going to tell you why, Armand. Because I think that within the struggle for, like, his placement, I tried to guilt her because she really said some things about herself and her relationship with her past family that was disturbing to me. And I felt afraid because I didn't see that side of my wife. So I felt afraid by it. And I couldn't take it. It was like some of the things that she was saying to me that really felt icky, to say the word. and I was repelled by it. And therefore, she took that repulsion as a kind of not being able to accept her feelings.
Sure, Joe. But if you ever saw a child look at something that they were going to eat for the first time and go, blech, and then they eat it and they love it.
Yeah.
We overlook initial reactions unless we want to keep the initial reaction. I'm saying the same thing to you. You and your wife have 25 years under the belt. You have a precious part of a friendship. You have
That's what I feel like I'm losing.
Yeah,
friendship.
Absolutely.
And
so we got to get it back somehow.
Well, you know, that's the other part of the story, because my wife's exit strategy has been sort of like a it's sexual, it's total, because she was involved as a default mechanism because of her early childhood in an alternative lifestyle. So when I met my wife, she was not really engaged in that lifestyle fully, but because of
since we're running out of time. So why haven't the two of you ever been to see a counselor to talk about this?
Well, I'm going to see a counselor, and actually, you recommended the counselor to me. So I'm going to see one. And
so why haven't you and she?
Well, you know what, Armand? I think that I'm trying to do that, but because there's such a power struggle at this particular point, that it's very difficult to bridge that gap.
And okay, but clearly your wife knows who I am, and clearly she has respect for me.
Yes, she does.
So why doesn't she come and see me, and I'll see the two of you and do something?
Hey, please, Armand, I'm begging you, God.
You don't have to beg me. I'll do, of course.
So I'm begging you. I am. I'm begging you.
No need to beg.
Yeah, but I don't have to, but I feel I need to emphasize this because it's a very serious situation, and I feel like I'm losing a part of myself.
I understand, and many people feel this way. Joe, I got you. You know, I got you covered. You give a call. Let's try to get this fixed. You know?
So call into your office?
Yes. You come get at me through my email, okay?
Okay.
Joe,
all right, thank you very much. My name is not Joe, by the way.
I know it's not Joe.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. So that happens, you know, and you could hear that 25 years. And, of course, that's a problem with analysis. You know, you look and you say, oh, my mother made me do it. After a certain point in time, it's no longer your past. It's your present, and it's just a safety valve. That's the trouble with therapy, too. You know, therapy sometimes gives you a reason not to take the step that is necessary. What are the steps we're looking for? You're looking for honesty. You're looking to have, ideally, a relationship that's a clear, honest relationship. You could have a dishonest relationship, too. I know people who don't talk to each other. I know people who don't tell each other any facts at all, and they have a good relationship. I know people who live independent, individual lives and barely see each other, but they have a strong love relationship. I know that, too, you know? So it's all possible. But the question is, it should be a life that's free of stress. You shouldn't be in pain about your relationship, because that, my friends, I believe, is the grand illusion. The pain is the exit. That's the thing that we hold back on. And the pain is just a toy. I'll be back with you in a couple of seconds. This is Armand DeMille. Be back just soon.
New York. I want to know. I want to know. Vorrei sapere. Vorrei sapere. Come fa la gente a concepire di poter vivere nelle case d'oggi inscatolati come le acciughe. Nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe. I want to know. To know, I want to know, I want to know, perché la gente non dice niente, I Mr. Hyde, I Dr. Jekyll, i costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto fanno le case dove la carie germoglia già. I want to know, I want to know,
I want to know, I want to know.
That I fight for the ever, for the thing of the fire. So whatever they have to be done here for whatever don't ever. Don't there ever fight it for whatever don't fire. Tough for them, tough for them, don't forever. Tough for them, tough for them, tough for them, don't forever. Tough for them, 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 tough for them.
Adriana Celentano, and I was driving through Italy one day. I was in a cab, actually, and I heard this on the cab, and I said, what is that music? The guy saying, I want to know, because I thought it should be the theme of our radio program. I want to know.
I want to know. I want to know.
I want to know,
vorrei sapere.
I want to know,
vorrei sapere.
Perché la gente,
I want to know.
Non dice niente,
I want to know.
I'm Mr. Hyde, I Dr. Jekyll, i costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto hanno le case.
Hey Steph, I'll make you a bet, you can't imagine what Adriano Celentano looks like. That's him. How's that for a surprise?
He looks like just such a hipster.
He looks like a hipster, right? Look at that. Good music.
Uomo Machina. Is that what that says?
Yeah, Uomo Machina. That's the Machine Man.
The Machine Man.
Hey, Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You know, let me ask you something, Stephanie. You know, so often issues come into relationships and people come in with issues. And you as therapist working with couples, you know, don't you see it? You know, they're talking about an issue that's a non-issue because they're not connected.
It tends to happen pretty frequently. People will think that that's the issue, but you have to ride out a lot of seasons, I say, in a relationship to get to know a person and tolerate all those difficult times. They're there all the time, but you have to get to the other part. And I believe you're right. When you have a connection, whatever it might be sexual, it might be hobbies, activities, things together, things you enjoy, that has to carry you through the other stuff. If you don't have the pleasure, it's really hard to deal with the pain.
And the pain, I believe, is mostly what we invent to fill in for the pleasure. You see, when the pleasure is missing. You want a feeling. So as the feeling, now of course, sex at the beginning. Love, tenderness, grabbing each other, holding each other, touching each other at the beginning is more than you could imagine chemically. I mean, it sets off fireworks in the human body. Fireworks, fireworks. In some Muslim countries, the very appearance of a woman's ankle, right, when the robes get lifted a little bit because you become intimate, is enough to set off fire. When you see the woman's face after it's been hidden behind the burqa for a long time, that's enough to set off the fire. Imagine what it's like to hold the body of another person close to you. Well, that contact becomes very important. One of the things they found about people as they get older is they tend to get a little crabby. And one of the things they found is if you get that person a pet, a dog or a cat, they get less crabby. Why? Because something is filling the spot. The misery was, the crabbiness was there to fill in for the contact. Or you massage. If you have an 85-year-old or 90-year-old or 80-year-old grandparent or mother or father, buy them a massage. Get somebody of the opposite sex to give them a good, pleasant massage. Nothing that hurts them. It's heaven. We don't think about the importance of that. People need to be touched emotionally, spiritually, physically. In place of that touch, we can't feel it, so we try to feel it in a different way. We create pain. And pain is just another way of being touched. And now we communicate over pain. The pain of the children growing up. The pain of the money. The pain of meeting the budgets. 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Dee Dee.
Hello, Dee Dee.
And I spoke to you maybe about a couple of years ago, but in reference to the issue at hand here, I have a problem because my boyfriend is 13 years younger than me. I'm 53, and I think he's 39 now. Yeah, so that's about right. Right? No, more than 14. I'm 53, he's 39. But anyway, the issue is we get along very well. We've been dating we've been going together for like a year and a half. And the problem is I'm always planning an exit strategy because I think he's going to be the one to end the relationship. So I'm always doing things to cause strife in the relationship. And he always says, you know, Deborah, he says, you always have to, when I reach one level, you always have to throw something in there or make it so that I have to go to another level. And he says, you do that on a consistent basis. And I do feel to some degree that I am kind of sabotaging the relationship because I have an issue with the age. And I really thought that when I met him, we would be just friends, but it developed into a good friendship, then a relationship.
Tell me other built-ins, Dee Dee. How is his income level?
Oh, no. Income level is very low.
He has no income level, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
How do I know this?
I guess that's the trend now, huh?
No, it's not the trend. It's because of the way you sound.
Oh, okay.
So what you've done is you've found somebody who's dependent on you.
Yeah.
And because he's dependent on you, you have this kind of hold on him. But because of that, that's the betrayal. You see, we do weird things to people because we don't believe that we have a right to be loved. So what you've done is you've got a guy who's dependent on you, and so you push him away and you say, is he still attached? Is he still attached? And you keep trying to see if he's still attached, because eventually, if he runs into his own income or somebody else with income, he may leave you, not just over age.
Mm-hmm.
But right now you're playing this role with him, and of course it's got to be just the way it is. So I say to you, keep testing it, because you're probably going to find out in advance when it's going to end. Because, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll last, maybe it won't last. But when you have something...
Unhealthy?
When you have... No, unhealthy is such a bad word. But when you have... You know what I mean? It's you're doing what you got to do, but the truth of it is, it is not a relationship that is chosen for its longevity. Because okay. It's chosen because it's convenient, comfortable, and safe. And Dee Dee, one thing I know about you, you don't trust anybody.
Oh my goodness, how could you tell?
Oh.
I don't believe that. I mean, I'm trying to work on that because I really feel that
yeah.
you have to trust.
No. Forget it. Give it up.
Really?
You're not going to trust anybody.
Oh, no.
Trust yourself.
That I do. I trust my mother.
Yeah. Well, I have issue with that, too, but...
oh, no.
Yeah, we'll get
I'm glad
back.
She doesn't listen to the station.
I'm glad she's not listening. It's all right not to trust your mother because mothers have their own interest at heart. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's true.
I mean, your mom has her own interest. You can't tell your mom, Mom, I'm going to go to a bar and pick somebody up and go home and have sex. She's going to get scared.
Oh, absolutely.
You would never tell her that, would you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Then you don't trust your mother.
Find me and cut my neck or something.
Right, so then you don't trust your mother.
That's
what I mean.
Yeah, but this guy, he's a really good person.
Sure.
And I really feel that, do you think when you mentioned part about being safe, are you speaking on his behalf or my behalf?
On your behalf. You're playing it safe. You're playing it safe as well as he can. You're somebody who doesn't trust anyone, so you try to get somebody who's attached to you. Fine. Hmm. Eventually, you'll trust. Or eventually you'll trust yourself enough to relax. And maybe
yeah.
he is Mr. Right. Maybe he's not. It just doesn't matter.
Okay.
Right now it's there, and I hope you enjoy it as much as you can.
Well, I am.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, Omar.
Sure. Best to you, Dee Dee.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. 212. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Tammy. And it just seemed like you really were talking about myself and my boyfriend. 2 months after I met him, he began to tell me that he gets hurt easily and to be careful, he falls in love. Excuse me. And I just really felt very wary of this. You know, I felt like if he's so concerned in such an early part of what we are doing, then maybe I need to back out. But anyway, because I liked him so much, and he was such a fun person, and I just really had this whole hormonal thing going. I was just adoring this guy. I decided I would continue to date him. And as time went on, I asked myself, did I want a commitment? Because, you know, he's really about commitment. And it became an issue for me, do I want to be committed? Because I myself felt like I was an individual who really preferred to be by myself, because I was by myself for so many years until I met him. But anyway, I decided, you know what, I'm going to commit. And when I say commitment, I don't mean commit in the sense, okay, you're mine, I'm yours. I mean, I really committed myself emotionally, spiritually, and physically to having an experience with this guy. And in the interim of this, I discovered something else about him. And what I discovered was he really was in a guarded state, okay? So what he had said 2 months into our getting to know each other kept coming back, okay? And I still continued to move forward toward this guy because I figured, well, you know what, it takes time. And like I said, I was really liking this guy. Then I discovered that I was planning me an escape, okay, because I figured for the most part, okay, this guy is guarded. I'm so open. I'm so ready to experience this person. And, you know, I just felt like everything that he was doing was in this guarded state, this individual who was wounded or damaged. So I was busy myself. You know, I started taking extra classes. I have organizational work that I could do. I started doing things to escape from whatever it was that was going on. But then there's another part that was taking place that I'm learning. I feel that we started suffering each other because we weren't really making physical contact. We weren't making the spiritual contact and the emotional contact with one another. And I think there was a suffering that was taking place where we would just take non-issues and turn it into such issues that it was unbelievable.
Kind of amazing, isn't it, how you do that?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Sure. Now, let me ask you something while we're at this, Tammy.
Yes.
Is he somebody who ever gets angry?
Oh, my God. He gets wild. I was going to stop dating him 2 weeks into...
because he gets rageful?
Yeah, he gets very upset. We were on the road.
Way off the handle, right?
Oh, you know it.
Okay, now look, Tammy.
Yes.
When you choose to get involved with somebody who flies off a handle, you are saying to yourself, I'm going to be with somebody who flies off a handle. That in itself is a limitation to the relationship. You could spend your life that way, but he's going to fly off the handle again. Nothing's going to change it. And when he chooses to be with somebody who tends to prefer to be alone, he is choosing somebody who is going to eventually push him away. So two damaged kids are trying to get together. Now listen, Tammy, I want you to imagine a house. And in the house, there's a crawl space. You know what a crawl space is, don't you?
Sure, yeah.
And in that crawl space, there's a little kid, a little girl, and she's wearing tattered clothing. And she's crawling through this crawl space, trying to find something. And there's a little boy somewhere down on the other side of the crawl space. And he's tattered, and he didn't know there's anybody there either. And so he's crawling forward.
Okay.
And he crawls towards you, and you crawl towards him. And you touch his finger and you say, oh my God, there's somebody else here. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
That feeling is a feeling that people take for love. And maybe it is love, you know? But it's knowing that there's somebody else in the crawl space that counts. All of these issues, all of these things, they either wear down with time or they wear away, you know? He's not wrong. You're not wrong. You could try the best you can. You could pay attention to the importance of the physical contact that you need to have with each other. But stop fighting about things, because things have no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah, you know, that's something that he does say, like when we catch ourselves and we're in that phase of talking about it, because he's the first to remove himself from whatever it is, okay? So when we get to that phase when we're talking about it and we come to this understanding, well, wait a minute, what is this? What are we going through this?
What are we even bothering with this?
Yeah,
you know, I just completed an article that I wrote on the guidelines for dealing with conflict in relationships and talking about different conflicts. If you get in touch with my website, send me an email. I'll send it to you.
Okay,
it's something worth having. But, you know, you're absolutely right. Your suspicion is right. None of this stuff is real.
It really isn't. And, you know, I just want to add this and then I'm going to leave. I think that the time that I spent to myself was so very vital in me developing and who I am and what I aspire to be as an individual. And I really felt very open. I didn't feel closed. I didn't feel limited. And, you know, I was just with this energy to experience this human being, to experience this world of dating. And, you know, he was just a prime candidate in the sense that he gave me this feeling that he, too, was open.
Well, I also want to take it, one other place, Tammy.
What's that?
Because you said you were hormonally ready. What did that mean?
You know, those endorphins, you know, the sense of this guy, the sight of this guy, just the smell, everything about this guy. You
what
know,
happens to us...
Open.
What happens to us is you say to yourself, I don't trust anybody. Well, I'm going to let myself trust. By the time you say, I'm going to let myself trust, you've gotten over the damage already. It wasn't just him. It was you willing to take a new chance in life.
Oh, yes, I was. And it was wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
It really was. And even
it's not was,
still,
it is.
It still is. I still care for him greatly, but I don't like...
Not about him. You care for yourself greatly.
Oh, absolutely. I do. And it's just, every day is a moment to be greater than the day before. Or as a friend of mine
Tammy,
would say,
congratulations.
Every new day, thank you. Every new day is like a present waiting to be opened. And this is who I am. And this energy, I live it out every day. And I'm just,
okay, I got to get going. I want to get another caller. Thank you, Tammy.
I know. I'm so selfish. Thank you, Armand. It's always good talking to you.
Always good. 212-209-2900. I want to get one more caller in here. Beautifully self-ish. I like that word. It means I take care of myself. 212-209-2900. One more call. Hi, you're on the air. This
hello?
Is Armand. Hello.
Yes, I'm calling because my daughter has issues like what you're speaking about.
Yes.
My daughter's 51 and single. And she's living at home with me, her mother. I'm almost 80 years old. And she's tortured. Because, like you say, when there's no one to share anything with, when there's no one to touch you, you're speaking of the opposite sex or a lover.
Yeah, or both, or even
family. It's a terrible
family.
Feeling, and she feels it.
Well, what about you? How do you feel about your touch? Who
my
touches
touch,
you? Yeah, who touches
well,
you?
Well, I love my daughter. I will kiss her on the cheek. I hold her.
But
she
who,
knows
who
that.
Massages you? Who holds you close to them?
I don't massage her bodily.
No, no, but what about you? I'm not asking about your daughter. I'm asking about you.
Me? How do I feel about massages?
Yeah.
I love massages.
When's the last time you got one?
I haven't had one in a long time.
Why is that?
They're expensive, and I have to travel far to get a good massage.
Well, I don't know. I think they're pretty inexpensive. You know what I mean? I don't think they're all that expensive.
Well,
and here's what part of what I'm hearing about you and your daughter. Your daughter does have issues, of course, and we have to take care of them. But if you took care of yourself a little more, it would help her a great deal. Because part of what she's feeling is also responsible for your well-being. You know, and I need you to take care of yourself. And I could hear you're somebody who takes care, but you don't feed yourself. And for you, touch is food. You need to be touched. I want you to go find a massage for yourself and get one at least every 2 weeks.
I love that.
I love it, too.
And I would work on it.
Will you please? And what's your name?
My name is Betty Fair. I live in Mount Vernon, New York.
Oh, Betty, there's so many good people giving massages in Mount Vernon. They charge, like some people charge $20 to do it.
I don't know of that person, but I do know there's a place in the neighborhood, $10 a minute.
Yeah.
I promised myself I would go there.
Well, not $10 a minute. It's pretty expensive.
It's pretty expensive.
Betty, I think it's
$10
for
10
minutes. I think it's $10 for 10 minutes.
Right.
Is what they charge. And you go there and you go in there and you could strike them a bargain. Say, I want 30 minutes and I'll give you $20. I need a senior discount. And they'll do it because they love you too.
Okay. May I say something else?
Sure.
Okay. I do know what you say about the pain. And I do know that pain causes arguments. And by listening to you, I myself can control the pain that the negativity that my daughter throws at me through her anguish. I understand better, and I myself will try to refrain and have more control and not to lash back because my daughter has said something to hurt me.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad you get that from our program.
Yes.
Okay, well, Betty, I send you a massage. I send you one across the airwaves.
Is there any time I could ever speak with you?
Sure, call my office.
What's your office?
Just go
number?
To my webpage and you'll find a way.
I don't have a computer now.
You'll ask somebody to find you one. Okay?
Fine. What did you say again?
Ask somebody to search it out. They'll do it for you.
I can go to the library. So
sure.
Give me your computer.
It's called thepositivemind.com.
Positive Mind. Amen to Mill Positive Mind.
Betty, thank you so much for calling in.
And go to the computer.
Yeah.
And it's called Positive Mind on the computer?
Yes.
What is it? Something.org?
Well, ask somebody to help you with it, okay, Betty? I got to get going.
Okay.
We'll find it, I'm sure. This is Armand Newell with you. It's Positive Mind. Beautiful people, huh? I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. And keep on touching.
Que tiene no bate el amor. matamangu manunini, panani basala moe.